Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Solomon on Blast. We are streaming live from the Power Talk Live studio this morning, and you can listen to us live every Saturday from 11 to 12 a.m. 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., actually, Arizona time, which is always Greenwich Mean Time plus 7, unlike most of the rest of this country last week, confused about what time it is, to the point they think they can even control when the sun rises and sets just by changing their clocks twice a year. We here in Arizona keep ours the same, so we're live the same time, 11 to 12 all year long. But if you missed a show because you were confused by what time it was or is, or you want to listen later, you can always find our shows on our website, SolomonOnBlast.com. It's because of all the confusion in our culture that we do this show. Solomon on Blast is all about the wisdom, knowledge, and understanding of Solomon for this confused culture. And I found this quote from a gentleman by the name of Dr. William Everett. He was a professor and dean of the College of Engineering at the University of Illinois. Back in 1944, he was actually there 1944 to 1968. This is his what he's calling his form of the second law of thermodynamics. He says, confusion is always increasing in society. Only if someone or something works extremely hard can this confusion be reduced to order in a limited region. And that's really kind of what we're doing, trying to do here, is reduce the confusion to order in our little arena. But he goes on to say that nevertheless, this effort will result in an increase in the total confusion of society at large. And so hopefully we're not doing that part of it. But most people have never heard of Dr. Everett, but his comments are very true, and I'm sure he could never have imagined just how true they would be today. Dr. Everett was a pioneer in the area of radio engineering and communication. The book he wrote in 1932 called Communications Engineering was considered the textbook for introducing the field of telecommunications to a generation of electrical engineering students, and that book was in print for over 30 years. During World War II, he was the director of operations research at the chief signal officer office of the Army Signal Corps. So basically, he ran the Army Communications Group during World War II, the Communications Center. It included the radar systems. And in 1954, he received a medal, the IEEE Medal of Honor, which is a lifetime achievement award, basically, from the engineering environment profession. And so he made a lot of contributions to the field of communications, and you could consider him to be essentially the father of our modern communication systems, which things like cell phones, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, all those things really exist because of the work he did back in the 30s, 40s, and going forward. And I'm sure he worked extremely hard to reduce the confusion to an order in this arena, in the communications field. But just as he stated in his law there, that his efforts have resulted actually in an increase in the total confusion of society at large regarding all these radio signals, which probably for the layperson, they might know them as EMF, electromagnetic fields, that get created by all this new technology. There's a general perception in this country and maybe even around the world that these EMF fields are a big cause of all kinds of health problems. But there's really not a lot of scientific evidence that they do anything. They're pretty much harmless. Now, if you get high enough power, obviously, you know, major power radar systems and that, you can definitely fry something. Just look at your microwave. You can melt, you know, whatever you want in a microwave. So, yeah, in certain arenas, these things are dangerous. But for the most part, they're harmless. But there are a lot of people that believe they aren't. And there's actually companies out there selling things that will supposedly protect you from all of this. The one that caught my attention the most, though, probably because of its name, is a company called SafeSpace. And I'm not promoting this company in any way. SafeSpaceProtection.com. They sell products for your home, a room, a car, your body, and even your property. They have modules, what they call geo-resonators. They're a great solution. This is from their website. These are a great solution for clearing and balancing the Earth's energy in yards, farms, parks, and neighborhoods. Because toxic Earth radiation can have a negative impact outside as well as inside, geo-resonators offer an important level of protection. They clear geopathic stress zones, and when planted in the four corners of an area, they immediately resonate with each other, infusing the treated area with healing, life-supporting energy field. In other words, they're creating a safe space for you from all those invisible waves that are supposedly out there after you. I doubt Dr. Everett could have even begin to imagine what he had pioneered would result in something like this. But just like society in general is confused about whether EMF is dangerous, the culture in general is confused about what is a real threat and what is imaginary. And one area where the confusion seems to be so prevalent, and I would have to say maybe a source of a lot of the confusion, is from these very universities and colleges like he has taught at. And in fact, one of them is the University of Illinois, where he taught. And they've created these safe spaces on campuses because they believe that they have to protect people going to the colleges. Now, they're not trying to protect them from electromagnetic fields, but instead they're basically trying to protect people's feelings. One of the safe spaces from the University of Illinois that they've put in place is an all-gender bathroom. That way people don't have to feel threatened, I guess, by having to figure out which bathroom they should use, the men's or the women's, if they're unsure about their gender identity. The sign for the bathroom just shows a toilet and a non-gender-specific person in a wheelchair. And the funny part about this, you know, there's obviously no little man or woman in the woman in the skirt and a man just standing there on these. But the ridiculous part, from their website, it says the signs are to identify single-use, locking-capable restroom facilities in campus buildings. In other words, they don't have to use a public restroom. They get a private one. So I'd say, who can argue with that, right? It's not nice to have your own private restroom. I'm thinking, though, maybe the real problem is they spent too much money on supporting safe spaces, and they can't afford to hire janitors to keep the public ones clean, but who knows. So does Solomon have anything to say about safe spaces? Of course he does, and it always makes a lot more sense than what the so-called educated college administrators are doing. Proverbs 18:10, Solomon says, "The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run to it and are safe." So the question for today, where's your safe space? We'll talk about that when we come back after this break. Okay, we're back with more of Solomon on Blast. A little bit of a problem getting our clip to play there. You can play it when you get it up and running.
Are you ready now?
Oh.
Yes.
Here we go.
Say goodbye, Toto.
Back on the Wizard of Oz.
Yes, I'm ready now. Then close your eyes and tap your heels together 3 times. And think to yourself, there's no place like home. There's no place like home.
There's no place like home. There's no place like home.
So where is your safe space? Maybe like Dorothy, there's no place like home. That's kind of the question, is why is there, what is it that seems to drive people to have the need for safe spaces? And is it in any way reasonable what these people are asking for at these colleges and universities and trying to put in place to avoid the feeling that they're, that they're being assaulted in one way or another?
Well, I have a question for you, Doug. Could it be that these safe spaces have become something that's seen as important, because a lot of kids in this generation have grown up with what you might say the lack of safe spaces. And what I mean by the really important institutions that used to make everybody feel really safe, or even something like a safe community, a safe upbringing, a safe home, et cetera.
Yeah.
And that this is kind of some deep, this play amateur psychologist, deep psychological reaction to the fact of not really having these sufficiently, at least in the way they feel about the world and in their experiences, that now suddenly, they're trying to recapture something or capture something they've never had, in that feeling of security and safety in some kind of environment, even if it seems really silly to people from a different
one of the articles I read, this is kind of how they identified it or define it. The theory that vulnerable students should be guaranteed psychological security, they say, has roots in a body of legal thought from the 80s and 90s. Feminist, anti-racist legal scholars argued that the First Amendment should not safeguard language that inflicted emotional injury through racist or sexist stigmatization. One scholar, Mary J. Matsuda, was particularly insistent that college students not be subjected to the violence of the word, because many of them are away from home for the first time and at a vulnerable stage of psychological development. If they're targeted and the university does nothing to help them, they will be left to their own resources and coping with the damage wrought. That might have, she wrote, lifelong repercussions. So according to these people, they're coming out of a very vulnerable place at a vulnerable stage of their psychological development, and they need to be protected. So maybe that's true, because they didn't have the protection that they needed. The question is, can the society, as Hillary would say, it takes a village to raise a child. Can that be the answer to the situation that these safe spaces are supposed to protect?
Now, personally, I don't think so. I think it, obviously, you start getting into another realm when you try to decide what constitutes acceptable speech and what doesn't, because the person deciding that is going to make it very arbitrary. They're arbitrarily going to come up with a definition that favors whatever they think.
Right, their belief system.
I'm not saying that it's a good thing. I'm just trying to understand maybe why these things are happening, why people are gravitating to these ideas.
Well, is society really a less safe place than it used to be, I guess is the question. Do we live in a more dangerous society than we used to live in, or are these people just throwing these out there as an excuse for being able to push their agenda onto these students' viewpoints?
Well, like in most cases, it's going to be a little bit of both. It's people that are, for whatever reason, feel very vulnerable and unsafe. And again, I don't think society, I don't agree with Hillary's premise that it takes a village. I think that's the reason why we need strong traditional organic families. I mean, I think that a lot of that happens there. But I understand also in society today, I saw a Pew Research number that said only 46% of kids today grow up with their biological parents together in the same home, which is way different than things used to be. So you can, and what all I'm saying is, you can see why they feel the way they feel, but I don't believe the answers are in government providing quote-unquote safe spaces, which really amount to simply an infringement on the First Amendment, free speech, because people are so sensitive now. And then you're giving the power, this power, to who's ever in charge to define what free speech means or how far free speech should go. And so, I mean, ultimately, I mean, all you have to do is look at the big picture and you'll say this is not going to a good place, because you take away free speech and you take away property rights and you take away everything after a while.
And I guess the question I have is, if the problem is, one of the problems is that they do need these safe spaces because, like you said, the home environment that they grew up in wasn't a safe space, then they're trying to fix the problem from the wrong viewpoint.
Yeah, and you're trying to fix the problem for adults, which is even more debilitating in my thinking. I mean, the time to help is when they're children. And when someone's an adult, it's too late. You know, university, what's the university for? What is the concept of a university? Are universal ideas, right?
Right. And the thought was that it was a place of education for the mind and for the rest of your life, and, you know, building base, a foundation for, at least when you looked at a lot of the original ones, they were more a theological-based educational system. And then it grew into scientific. And now it seems like the majority of people that are going into university colleges are more in the liberal arts aspect of it because of the viewpoint that everybody's got to have a college
education. Now, progressives love the universal concept of a university when it comes to attacking the religion of a freshman kid.
Absolutely.
You're here on this campus. You're going to hear things you don't like. That's just the way it is. Open your mind. You need to the whole spiel. But when it's the other way around, when somebody challenges all these, progressive ideas and arrived opinions about all these other subjects, that's hurtful. That's mean. You need to stay away from challenging those ideas. And so that's, I think a lot of it is the idea is that they've weaponized, as an article in Atlantic recently stated, they've weaponized the whole safe space concept. In other words, I can say whatever I want, but whenever you try to say what you want, I'm going to run and hide and claim that you're being terribly insensitive.
Yeah, there was actually an article I read that was kind of referring to the same thing. The student group had organized a debate, and this was at Brown University. A student group had organized a debate about campus sexual assault, and she was a senior member of its sexual assault task force at Brown University, and she felt that they were going to likely criticize the rape culture and alarm by it. So bringing in a speaker like that could serve to invalidate people's experiences, and it would be damaging. So she set up they complained about the fact that they were doing this, so they allowed them to set up a competing debate at the same time in another area that was going to promote this whole thing. And she said, in order so that the students or the people that were going to go there would feel better about having, if they felt that the debate was going to affect them negatively, they decided they would set up a safe space. And so the safe space was intended to give people who might find comments troubling or triggering a place to recuperate. And in this, the room was equipped with cookies, coloring books, bubbles, Play-Doh, calming music, pillows, blankets, and a video of frolicking puppies. So,
at least they know their audience. You have to give them credit for that.
And that was exactly my thought. It's like, wait a minute, they're so concerned about these kids, they're going to take them back to kindergarten so that they feel like they're safe. Now, the comment from this lady that set it up, she said that they estimated that at least 2 dozen people made use of the space. Now, I don't know how you estimate 2 dozen people. There's not that many. You should be able to, one, count them and go, okay, there's 24 people here versus estimate. And I want to say, most of them probably went for the cookies because that's human nature, you know, free cookies.
Or sheer boredom, you know?
Yeah. But it's this kind of thing where they just seem to you know what? You can't say anything bad. You've got to take and give them a space where they can.
And you think about what a debate is.
It's a debate. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
To discuss opposite.
They have two different points of view, and right. Somebody should find a safe space in one of those points of view. You know, that's the whole idea of a debate, a proposition, and the status quo. You choose a side, and that side should in some way represent your thoughts and your feelings and your sentiments on that particular subject. I mean, what we're really talking about here, and this is why it doesn't really wash. I mean, I asked the question, is there a reason for it? But it doesn't wash because really this amounts to trying to track thought crimes. They're criminalizing, in a sense, this is the first step to criminalizing. At first it starts by censoring, and now it's criminalizing somebody's thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Those thoughts are mean. We need to provide some kind of escape from someone's opinion. It's too hurtful. And what's the next logical step from that? Well, you know what? We've had enough of your thoughts. Rather than put our people in a safe space, we're going to put you in a safe space. And that safe space also is known as jail and right. gulag and other places like that.
Because we don't agree with your thought process or what it is that you're espousing in your debate.
You know, David Horowitz, I like his he's very forthright about the fact that he grew up as a communist as a kid. He was one of the Brooklyn communists. Went out to Berkeley, led a lot of student protests and that sort of thing. Anyway, he just made this statement. He said the very essence of a totalitarian regime is its determination to punish thought crimes. And basically, thought crimes are the thoughts of those who disagree with its rule. That's basically what's happening.
All right. We're going to have to take a break. A celebrity call. More of Solomon on Blast. Here on Power Talk Live. And we're talking about safe spaces. And the question you asked, I think, was related to home. And you know, I played that clip. Dorothy said, there's no place like home. And I think that's true. That used to be the case. There was no place like home. And society in general was a lot safer. Criminal activity, well, I think, if you look at the numbers, crime statistics, there has been an increase. But for the most part, most people don't encounter that aspect of feeling unsafe. Maybe in certain areas, definitely. And, you know, if you're going to send your kid down into the hood for groceries, obviously he's going to feel threatened. So you wouldn't do that. So my question with that aspect is, why do these parents send their kids into the colleges? Because it's obvious these places are just like sending them into the hood. They're going to go into an area that's going to attack their belief system and be, for the most part, a dangerous place. So yeah. Why would parents continue to send their kids into these colleges? It's the battleground.
They're sending them into a spiritual hood, so to speak.
Exactly.
You know, like one of the talk show guys likes to say, institutions of lower living.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where they're going. But, you know, getting back to the question, you're right. For the most part, society, especially in America, thank God, we're still not like, you know, some of these other countries where you have to worry about cartels, you know,
right.
opening fire somewhere, you know, unless you're in the wrong neighborhood, it doesn't usually happen in America. But getting back to the thought of feeling unsafe, I think our young people today are philosophically unsafe, philosophically unsure of themselves. I think all the platitudes that you're fed, you know, from MTV and all that kind of stuff, those things, you know, they don't hold any water, and they know it emotionally and spiritually. It used to be that we talked about this a few weeks ago. You used to be you were given a worldview by your parents, whether you departed from it later, adjusted it, however you blended it with something else, your own experiences, expanded it, whatever. You were given something, and that worldview enabled you to feel safe. It enabled you to to think through some things until you're able to come to another point, and then maybe, like I said, come up with some of your own ideas. But
I think
one of the biggest problems, that they're spiritually vacuous.
Right.
Is what I mean.
And I think
there's nothing there.
You're going to have a hard time finding a true safe space in a society that has basically rejected or doesn't want to acknowledge that God is the basis for your existence. So if you're going to reject that aspect of it, where do you go to find a safe space if you don't have what Solomon has said is the fear of the Lord, right?
Right.
He's a strong tower.
He's a strong tower.
He's that tower that we're going to run to and be safe. So if society has thrown that out, you pretty much have given up the one area that you could have had as a safe space.
Well, another name for a place of worship is sanctuary, right?
Right.
That's a sanctuary. You enter into a sanctuary to worship God. Usually in a church facility or campus, it's the sanctuary is the actual place where people worship. And you know, the whole idea behind a sanctuary is that you're in a place that's safe.
Right.
It's a refuge from the rest of the world, from all the other issues and challenges that people of faith are facing. To go into the sanctuary is that safe place. It's the strong tower that you're
right.
referring to, where people can just say, I don't care about what my burdens are out here. I can worship God. I can meditate, hear the word of God. I can meditate on the word of God. And in this refuge, I can, you know, secure my spirit, my soul.
Well, to me, if you're throwing out God out of society, one of the aspects of that you're losing is the Sabbath itself, right?
Right.
That you have 6 days to work and 1 day to rest. And so the Sabbath really reflected that safe space out of a roundabout, you know, the never stopping treadmill of life.
Right.
You could get off once a week, and the Sabbath was what God created to reflect that safe space.
So then what you're really saying is that we long for a safe space. It's in our natures.
It's
in our created nature, right?
Right. That if we are truly created by God and he's created that environment for us, we're looking for that ability to stop, get off, and be safe for a day, forget about what the world's doing, because in reality, the world never stops. Things are going on continually. And so if you never take a break, take that vacation, you're going to burn out. So I think that's kind of the view I see, is that if you've thrown out God, you've thrown out even that one day. Now you've also thrown out the sanctuary where you can go get maybe a little bit of refreshing, a place to pick up the tools that you need to fix life's problems. And if you haven't got anything in the toolbox, it's going to be very, very hard to fix anything or even create anything.
And these concepts, Doug, are not just super spiritual thoughts about, you know, ideas that people don't really agree on. We are talking about some of the fundamentally necessary items that people need in their toolbox just to function, like peace of mind, right?
Right.
Ethics. Personal convictions about what's right and what's wrong, how far you're going to go with this and how, you know, where you're going to stand with that. All these things give you the tools to make all your important decisions in life. And if you're not being refreshed and renewed and challenged in that area, where do you get the challenges from? Where does it come from? How do you, without a timeout, so to speak, where you go mm-hmm. into a refuge, how do you refresh and renew?
Solomon's made another statement, Proverbs 28:26. He says, those who trust in themselves are fools, but those who walk in wisdom are kept safe. So I think that's kind of what you're saying. You only have yourself to fall back on if you don't have that real, true safe space to go to. You're going to rely on your own self, and inherently, people are insecure.
Well, right now we're in March Madness, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is where...
Let's not talk about the U of A.
The U of A. So, and unfortunately, the timeouts couldn't hurt them. But, you know, how important... I couldn't help them, I should say.
Yeah.
How important is a timeout by a coach?
Oh, you see that
at
all the time.
A certain point, the other team is making a run. They've got momentum. Things are beginning to click. Their offense is falling into place. And the really good coaches have the ability to time those timeouts very carefully and not abuse them.
Right, not waste one.
Waste them and use it just at the perfect timing. They seem to cut the head off, you know, the rally. And they turn around and they reset the game. And they regain their rhythm and whatnot. And it's just vital, right, to actually moving toward victory.
Right.
And it's the same thing with a person in life. There's got to be the timeouts in life.
Right. If you run out of timeouts, there's no way to stop that.
You just have to take life as it comes. And sometimes you can be overwhelmed and how it comes at you.
You know, this group that set up this safe space at Brown University, the one girl made a comment, and in reality, it's very telling on how, with regards to what we're talking about. She went into the debate, and she said it was the lecture hall was packed, but after a while, she had to return to the safe space. And her comment was, "I was feeling bombarded by a lot of viewpoints that really go against my dearly and closely held beliefs."
Well, that's it right there.
Right?
I mean...
It sounds foolish from the aspect
that... At least that's an honest...
But she's being honest.
...description of what we're really dealing with.
Right.
Somebody says, "I don't want to hear what I don't want to hear, and you're mean for telling me something I don't like hearing. Right. And I should be protected from you." Let's get back to that a little bit. The safe space generation, so to speak. And I don't want to paint everything with the same brush, but... I would suspect, now I can only suspect because I don't know who's who, many of the people that are going into other people's rallies and trying to disrupt other political rallies, we'll leave the names out,
right,
are probably the same people that would say, "We need safe spaces on campus." So on one hand, it's okay to invade someone else's safe space, but as long as I get – so basically, I get to give my opinion – you just don't get to give yours. Mm-hmm. That's what it really comes down to.
Right. I think part of it is that a lot of the younger generation is just too sensitive to everything. They haven't built up a system where they can rely on maybe some calluses, maybe some, you know, you fall down enough times, you figure out how to protect yourself when you fall.
You know, a good boxing analogy is what this is reminding me of. It's what they call the glass jaw.
Yeah.
I think the glass jaw, you know, the guy that can throw a good punch, can be very quick and even dangerous and knock you out if you're not careful. But all you have to do is connect once, and you know what I mean? And the jaw just goes to 1,000 pieces and they fall. And that's what you see. People that are really able... You know, smart, articulate, they can speak their mind, they can be very passionate about where they're coming from, but you come back and you come back the other way and they just fall apart and feel so violated and so hurt. And so that's really what you're dealing with. You're dealing with a one-way worldview. I can say what I want to say, but if someone says the opposite, then I'll tell you what.
Solomon has a good piece of wisdom to address that. He says in Proverbs 19:11, "The discretion of a man makes him slow to anger, and his glory is to overlook a transgression."
Right.
So when you don't have that wisdom that says, you know what, not everything needs to turn me into a raging maniac or force me to go run to my safe space, the glory is you can overlook those kind of transgressions against you. You can build up some wisdom that says not everything is really going to be that big of an impact.
Well, I think starting with the 60s generation, which is before us, but these guys have exchanged what I call serious-minded religion. They have exchanged it for causes. In other words, that's how you show what kind of person you are, whether you're decent, whether you really care about humanity, you express it through your cause. And I think that's one of the reasons they're really very, what they don't realize, like they don't think they're religious, but they are some of the most religious people you'll ever see are people, you know.
Right. I agree. Yeah.
They're super religious. They cannot hear anything they don't like hearing. It's sacrilegious to them.
To me,
they will make sure know exactly, you know, where they're coming from.
And I think the universities are very, very much reflective of that. They're a religion unto themselves.
Right. And they think because they don't have a religion called Christianity or Judaism, they're not religious. But in fact, in many ways, they're extremely religious and they behave just like religious fanatics.
Absolutely. All right. We've got to take a break. We'll come back with more of Solomon on Blast right after these breaks. And we're back, Solomon on Blast, here on the Power Talk Live, streaming again this week. So listen, powertalklive.com. And if, like I said at the beginning, if you miss anything, solomononblast.com. We'll have our shows up there. You can download them and listen to them at your leisure in your safe space if you want. So we're talking about safe spaces and really, are they realistic? Or are they just a lot of maybe gobbledygook, a lot of hokey science like these geosensors that provide protection for you from EMF environments? And I think part of it is that there is a real need for these safe spaces. And like these EMF electromagnetic fields that people think are coming after them, most of the time, the perceived threats are an invisible threat, because war is a very obvious physical environment where you feel threatened. And the longest real running war that we have had is that war between good and evil, and that's for the most part an invisible war. A lot of times it's a war that really attacks people mind, and they don't see the attacks. A lot of times you get deceived, you don't have that ability to have a toolkit, you get frustrated, you really don't have any approach to how you're going to deal with things. Ecclesiastes in 2:23, Solomon says, kind of describing this from the perspective of what a person's life can be like, he says, for all his days are full of sorrow and his work is a vexation. Even in the night, his heart does not rest. And I think that's kind of what most people have at times encountered. You encounter an environment where every day is full of sorrow, your work is vexing you, and at night, your heart can't even rest. So there is a real need for a safe space when that's the kind of environment you're dealing with. Days full of sorrow, you're vexed at work, your heart doesn't rest at night, you know, you're restless at night, you're going to need some place to go to resolve those kind of problems. And a lot of times they're invisible attacks, like these people say these EMF waves are invisible attacks on them. And I think in reality it's true. We do have those kind of attacks. We don't see them. We perceive them maybe, but for most people, perception is reality. And like Dorothy said, you know, sometimes there's no place like home, and if you can get back to home, that safe space, you're going to be a lot better off.
And the sad thing is there are so many virtual safe spaces that are not healthy, like prescription medication.
Right.
I mean, the figures right now are up to 25% of Americans are on prescription meds. I mean, for the very things you're talking about, not because of high blood pressure.
Right.
But because to coping medications.
Right. And alcoholism is one of the other aspects of...
And then illicit drug addiction on top of that doesn't even... Right. It's not even in there.
Right.
So, you know, we're talking about a fundamental human need. And so that does, this does raise that issue to where you realize that they're just putting a name on it and, you know, and politicizing it. But nevertheless, there really is a real need. What do people do? Where do they go? Where do they hide?
And
I'm when life is overwhelming.
Yeah, I'm wondering if maybe that's why Bernie resonates with so many of the young people. Maybe they see, you know, Grandpa's going to protect me from going out into that big bad world and provide me what I need. Right? I don't want to have to go out there. Solomon says it best, I think, Proverbs 22. He says, the lazy man says, there's a lion outside. I shall be slain in the streets. And I think when you get down to it, people's insecurities, that's the approach that they're going to have, that they take. You know what? There's too many threats out there. I can't go out into the real world and deal with this problem. So they look for other methods, these safe spaces, to go and try and resolve those problems.
Well, you know, speaking of Bernie, you know, Nick Gillespie, he does this, he has a website, I forgot the name of it, Time Magazine ran one of his surveys. And the most astonishing thing about his millennial survey was that 70% actually supported the idea of these are millennials, of guaranteed health care, what, guaranteed income, and there was another guaranteed housing, I think, mm-hmm. which amounts to socialism by a different definition, you know? Guarantee, how do you guarantee those things? So it's basically the same idea, right?
Right.
I want... This
I want a safe
guarantee
space.
Means safe. Right. That's what the word exactly. means. Secure. And
these kids, people on the college campuses, they really aren't going to find any kind of refuge there when it really comes down to it. If they were able to, then you wouldn't have a lot of these problems. But obviously, the refuge really doesn't exist there. These kids... coping mechanisms, maybe they've learned it from watching Disney movies or something, I don't know. At times, just how ludicrous things are, where, like in Disney movies, right? Animals right. become human and humans become the animals. And I think that's kind of where we've seen right. society go
that's
towards.
That's a good way to put it. The humans are the mean people
right.
in those, right?
Absolutely. And that's what people see. If you look at the protest against, what was it, Cecil the Lion thing, to me it's like they view things, we've become Disneyfied, I guess.
Yeah, Jimmy Kimmel even wept over that on air.
Yeah. So animals have become human, and so there's a lot of need to go out there and protect, you know, stand up for the animals, but humans are the animals in those things. They're the evil side, and so... That's kind of how they seem to want to deal with life. And real problems can't be resolved the way Disney resolves them.
So then the highfalutin concept, I think, of the founders of this country is that liberty is the safest place. Now, it's an insecure place on the front end.
Absolutely.
Right?
Right.
But in the long run, liberty will make you safer. It makes you safer from tyrants, right?
Absolutely.
It makes you safer from power. Anybody leveraging power against you, including anybody in the business world or whatever, you're just as equal as they are. And so, it's insecure up front, but in the long run, it makes you more secure. So,
long as you have a boundary for that liberty, right?
Right.
And so, you know, driving down the road at 150 miles an hour or coming down Mount Lemmon at 150 miles an hour, you have all the liberty in the world if you want to drive whatever speed you want, but if you haven't got guardrails up, you know, you're going to end up dead no matter who you
right.
are.
Right. And their idea of liberty, of course, was tempered by some assumptions they had,
that
being
had,
that where they came from.
That you had boundaries.
That you had your boundaries were institutions like church and
home,
family. You
family.
Had boundaries. And that you just, they assumed that you understood that part of it. And they say as much in their writings, that without those, you mm-hmm. would be in trouble. But, and so I think this is what needs to be recaptured, and that is an appreciation for true liberty. And unfortunately, when you want everything to be so secure and safe, you start trading out liberty for that feeling of safety.
Right. Those that are willing to give up freedom for safety deserve neither, basically. We've heard that quote before. And I want to bring it back around to where the real sanctuary is. And we always do a one greater than Solomon. So Hebrews 8, chapter 8, verse 1 and 2, we're told the main point in what has been said in this, we have such a high priest who has taken his seat on the right hand of the throne of the majesty in the heavens, a minister in the sanctuary and in the true tabernacle, which the Lord created, not man. That's Christ. That's who our real, true, safe place is. And that's, I think, what the writer of Hebrews is saying. We do have somebody, someplace, a minister, a sanctuary that we can go to and not be concerned about the world. We have an altar. And I think that's the one greater than Solomon aspect of taking the wisdom beyond what Solomon has given us, that we still need that basic aspect of our life, and throwing out church, throwing out God is going to end up giving us what we see in our society today.
Yeah, it's not going to make the world a safer place. One last line here from George Orwell. He said, if liberty means anything at all, it means the right to tell people what they do not want to hear. So when you come to that point where I don't want to hear this anymore, I want to be safe, well, I'll tell you, your safety's coming at the expense of
liberty.
You're
in a dangerous place.
And then once you take out liberty, then you are truly vulnerable to people who have power.